Welcome back. I'm Steve Jackson, and this is Take It to God. This is episode 14, and if any of you had a chance to listen to episode 13, I kind of discussed how I felt that the timing wasn't right to do this particular episode until now. I have known about this topic. I have studied this topic and dealt with this whole episode probably around episode 8. I knew I wanted to do it at some point in time. I just felt like Yahweh was kept on pushing it. It's interesting because if any of you had a chance to listen to episode 4, which was an ancient Hebrew story, I discussed not only about the ancient Hebrew letters and what they mean, but also about the logo that I designed for this particular podcast and how it actually represents the Alpha and Tav, which is the Hebrew version of Alpha and Omega. So the two letters are the Alpha and the Tav. And when I stepped back and looked at it, I noticed that it also made the number 14. And this was totally something that I wasn't planning. It was, you know, as Yahweh guided me through the process, this is what came out. And usually when Yahweh does that to me, I know that there's multiple meanings. So I went and looked up what the number 14 meant, and it meant deliverance and salvation. And so I just stuck that in the back of my mind because that was really interesting to me. And I just assumed it was an extra layer that Yahweh had. But I had no idea as to what level he was going to tie this in. Around episode 10, at the end of the movie message that I did with Nathan, I began calculating, okay, how many more topics do I want to do? Probably about four more that I want to do, or three more that I wanted to do. And I thought a little bit of an intermission thing would be kind of cool as you guys have listened to it. I realized that was 14 episodes. Now, I kind of think this is probably going to be my last episode for a while. I'm not quite sure if this is the end of it or if this is just temporary, but I do know that it'll probably be the last one for a little bit. And usually that means that there's also a season in my life that's probably coming to an end or something new is transitioning. And so I just find that really, really interesting. Now, before I really get started into this episode, I want to just make the statement that what I'm going to discuss in this episode is not necessarily my opinion on any particular social issue. It is more of a challenge for each and every one of us to look at ourselves before we start judging other people. That's why I entitled this thing, The Log in My Eye. We tend to always love to pick the speck, and Yeshua was very clear when he talked about that. He's like, don't be judging people. Don't be trying to pick the speck out of your brother's eye when you have a huge log in your own. And I think that's our problem, is we love to pick everybody else, but we never like to look at ourselves, because that's more challenging. That forces us to be more susceptible to what Yahweh wants to say to us. And oftentimes we don't want to hear that. But like I said, I'm not making a statement about my opinion. I am merely challenging you to think outside of the box and really begin to ask Yahweh. Because I think this is probably going to be one of my more controversial episodes, because it really tackles a lot of social issues. And some of the things that I think we really need to look at before we start taking those steps. Now, as you begin to battle these things out with Yahweh and really begin to look at yourself first, then you can move on to the next person. And whatever you and Yahweh decide needs to be addressed, then I'm behind you 200%. And I pray that you be obedient to what Yahweh tells you to do. But I think it's very, very important to look at ourselves first. So to start this episode off, I want to play a clip from Michael Rood. Now, Michael Rood and his ministry is where I got a lot of information when it came to the ancient Hebrew stuff, a lot of about the feast, about some of the old traditions, about the Torah and Yeshua's take on it, and the names, obviously Yahweh and Yeshua. And he did an episode about Let No Pagan Judge You. And this particular clip is going to come from that episode, and he has those episodes on YouTube. He also sells them on his website, which is michaelrood.tv. But like I said, I'm going to play this clip from Let No Pagan Judge You, and it's part two if you're looking on YouTube. And this is about one of the most celebrated Christian holidays, Christmas. And so I want you to sit back. The clip's about 4 minutes long, and I just want you to listen to it and kind of absorb it, and then we'll move on from there.
We read in the scroll of Ruth that Elimelech and his family left Bethlehem during a drought and sojourned east of Israel in the land of Moab. The Moabites were worshippers of the pagan god of prosperity, Chemosh. It was the same cast iron, pot-bellied god that their kindred the Ammonites worshipped by the name of Molech. They both wore the Phrygian cap, the official headwear of both Tammuz in Babylon and later Mithra in Rome. At the time of the winter solstice, December 25th on the ancient calendar, they had a public child mass, meaning sacrifice. The priests stoked the iron image of the enthroned Chemosh with wood and burning pitch, turning their pot-bellied god into a cherry red furnace. The people made long lists of their desires and recited them to the god of prosperity just before they put their infant children into the red-hot lap of their god with his Phrygian cap. As the babies were incinerated in the December 25th child mass, the people were assured that their sacrifice would be rewarded in the coming year. On the same day, south of Israel, the Egyptians worshiped their sun god, Ra. An Egyptian hieroglyph depicts Ra castrating himself, just as Greek legend tells of the god Attis performing the same surgery on himself. Worshippers of Ra would hang gold and silver balls on an upright palm tree, as Jeremiah reports it, and place their decorated gifts to the sun god under the tree decorated with the gold and silver testicles of Ra. This vain custom was performed on Ra's birthday, December 25th. When Israel adopted this custom, they used the evergreen tree, which they cut out of the forest with an axe and erected it in their homes with the help of a hammer and nails so that it would not topple over, and decked it with gold and silver balls. God calls this festival an abomination. In the 1600s, it was illegal to have a Christmas tree or even a Christmas service in America. The pilgrims knew that it was pure pagan sun god worship. Now, don't be offended because I'm telling you these things. Be offended because these abominations have gone unchallenged by modern paganized Christianity. These occult practices have changed very little since being brought into America. A month before the birthday of Tammuz, we have our children make endless lists to the cherry red, pot-bellied god of prosperity, and then we place our terrified children into the lap of this god who sits on his throne in the shopping mall wearing his Phrygian cap. On Christmas Eve, he will come down the fireplace chimney and deliver gifts under the evergreen tree decorated with gold and silver balls. Our children will kneel before the evergreen phallic symbol as they receive the blessings from their god. And parents charge their credit cards to the limit to make certain that their children are not disappointed when their God makes good on his promise of prosperity. Months before the event, the world shifts into high gear to promise the most fulfilling experience of life, when our children open boxes filled with their greatest hopes and dreams. More stuff. The reality is never as great as the carrot dangled before our nose. Our children are disappointed before the last package is opened, and we are in debt for the next 9 months to try to pay for this sinking feeling of despair. That morning's event set up a chain reaction that results in the highest incidence of suicide in the entire year. Instead of putting our children into the fiery red hands of Chemosh on Child Mass Day, we abort millions of babies during the rest of the year, and then celebrate our affluence by lavishing gifts upon business colleagues whom we don't even like, just to show that the God of prosperity is still smiling on us approvingly. It is the same God that is served. The names of the gods just change from culture to culture.
All right. Before I go on, I just want to clarify some things that he was talking about. He said the Phrygian cap. Now, this is a video episode of him, so you got to see what he was wearing, but he was wearing basically a Santa hat. He was decked out in a full Santa suit as to give the example of the Christmas Santa thing. But the Phrygian cap is basically a Santa hat, and if you watch the YouTube video, you'd see that. Chemosh, that god, I'm just going to spell it out for you if you ever want to study a little bit more. It's C-H-E-M-O-S-H is how you would spell it. Some of the verses that he relates to when he talks about it being an abomination, that's 1 Kings chapter 11, verse 7. It talks about the sacrifice of the children and how Chemosh was the abomination of Moab. That verse kind of explains that. There's more verses in there, but that's kind of the main one. When he talks about the gold and silver balls and putting in the tree and the nail to hold the tree up and stuff like that, you find that reference in Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 5. So, I want to kind of talk about Christmas in general. So now you heard that little spiel. I just thought it'd be better to play you the clip. It would explain it the best way. So, knowing what you know about the origins of Christmas, do you see it now as an abomination? Or do you still say, well, that's not what it means to me? Are you still of the opinion, well, I celebrate it as the birth of Jesus and it means that to me. It doesn't mean this commercial stuff. And I know it comes from pagan traditions and so forth and so on. But that's not what it means to me. We've changed the meaning. And so now we can pull from that and make it a more Christ-centered holiday. So Christmas doesn't mean that to me. I know it says not to do it in the Bible, you know, in the Old Testament stuff, but that's not what it means to me. And we always say Jesus is the reason for the season, but I'm terribly sorry to say that he's not the reason for the season. Yeshua is not the reason for the season. As you can hear from this audio clip, that's not the reason that we have Christmas. It's what we made it into. And there's reasons that that happened. And Michael Rood talks about that, how during the reign of Constantine, he tried to combine all the religions together to make it one cohesive religion, because it's much easier to govern a group of people if all of them have the same religion. So he was able to tie in the Christianity, which he was going to put in place, and tie it into pagan traditions and get rid of the Jewish traditions that it stemmed from. And then you have a more cohesive religion, much, much easier to control. All right, let's talk about Easter now. Easter's kind of a combination of two different people. It's Easter, who was the mother of Tammuz and the wife of Nimrod. And Nimrod was the great-grandson of Noah, and he was also the king of Babel. And then the other person is Tammuz, and Tammuz is the son of Nimrod and also the son of Easter. Now, Nimrod was dead before Tammuz was ever born or technically conceived. Now, what Easter said was that she was impregnated by the rays of the sun, and thus was conceived Tammuz. And so Tammuz was worshipped as deity. Now, about 40 years into his life, Tammuz was killed by a wild boar. And so now we have a tradition that for 40 days, we give up an earthly pleasure in our lives, and what we say it is the 40 days and 40 nights of Yeshua. When in reality, what it was based off of was removing an earthly pleasure here on earth for 40 days to represent each year of Tammuz's life, so that when we gave up an earthly pleasure here, he would get to have that pleasure in the afterlife. So that was our worship to him, and so thus was Lent. And then at the end of those 40 days, they would kill a wild boar or pig and cook it in honor of Tammuz. So that's why we always have ham as a tradition for Easter. Now, the whole bunny and the whole egg thing, what that came about was, is when Easter was reincarnated, she came down as an egg-laying rabbit to prove her divinity. And so what they would do is, to honor her, they would take eggs and dye them in the blood of sacrificed children, very similar to the Chemish stuff, dyed in the blood of the sacrificed children, and that would honor Easter. Now, there's a lot of denominations out there that actually only dye their eggs in red, and a lot of them have no idea why, but that would be the reason why. So, knowing what you know about the origins of Easter, do you now see it as an abomination? Or do you still say, well, that's not what it means to me? What it means to me is celebrating the death and resurrection of our Savior Jesus Christ. Even though, if you counted the whole 3 days, three nights in the grave thing from Friday to Sunday, it mathematically doesn't work. Even if you counted Good Friday as the day, you would have Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which would be 3 days, but then you run into a problem. You only have two nights. Okay, so mathematically that doesn't even work. But let's forget about that. And let's just say that to you, Easter and Lent and Good Friday is nothing more than the celebration of the death and resurrection of Yeshua. Now, the problem is that in the Torah, these kind of celebrations are considered an abomination, and this is why. I'm going to read Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 29 through 31, and this is what it says. When Yahweh your Elohim does cut off from before you the nations which you go to dispossess, and you dispossess them and dwell in their land, guard yourself that you are not ensnared to follow them, after they are destroyed from before you, and that you do not inquire about their mighty ones, saying, how do these nations serve their mighty ones? And let me do so too. Do not do so to Yahweh your Elohim, for every abomination which Yahweh hates they have done to their mighty ones, for they even burn their sons and daughters in their fire to their mighty ones. And that ties back very clearly to Chemish. So we can say, well, we have a toned-down version. But the fact is we still do the exact same things. And that's what Michael Rood was explaining in that audio clip, especially with Christmas. We do the same things with Easter, except we don't do the child sacrifice part. But like Michael was saying, you see that with Christmas and putting your children on Santa's lap. Same kind of concept. So now that we have that in our conscious, I want to go to a little bit more of the meat of my episode. I want to discuss DOMA. Now, DOMA is the acronym for Defense of Marriage Act. And that talks about how marriage will be defined as between a man and a woman, and each state will have the option as to whether or not they even accept gay marriage, let alone officiate it. And that ties into what Proposition 8 was in California. Now, the ones who were primarily against Proposition 8 were the evangelical church system and the Mormon church system. Now, they were the ones who really pushed hard to vote yes on Proposition 8 to protect the concept of the man and the woman as a marriage unit. And as I watched this whole process, I had multiple thoughts in my head. But one of them was I had this vision of people at the end of times when Judgment Day comes, and they say to Yeshua, we pushed for Prop 8. We defended the sanctity of marriage between a man and a woman. And I could see Yeshua going, oh, that's great, that's great, that's great. But I have this question for you. I noticed that you celebrated Christmas and Easter. What was that about? Oh, well, see, that was about you. That was totally about you. I mean, we celebrated your birth. We did it for you. I mean, that was a good thing. And he goes, yeah, but didn't I tell you? I mean, I'm sure you read the scriptures, right? Didn't I tell you that doing that kind of stuff was not what I wanted? I wanted you to celebrate the way I wanted you to celebrate. Well, yeah, but, you know, when Yeshua came, he did away with all of those rituals, and so we don't have to worry about those things. I mean, if we can celebrate Christmas because that's a good thing, right? I mean, he did away with the law. That was the whole point. And I don't know why this verse comes to mind, but it's Matthew 25, and it's verses 31 through 46. And I'm going to focus on verse 44, but I would recommend reading it again. He talks about where he separates the sheep and the goats. And he's saying, you know, you didn't give me any food. You didn't give me any shelter. You didn't give me anything. And the people said, Master, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or a stranger or naked or sick or in prison and did not serve you? And he said, truly I say to you, in so far as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. And these shall go away in everlasting punishment, but the righteous into everlasting life. Now, the thing I find interesting also is that of any of the churches out there that could claim that they don't celebrate Easter and Christmas and that they have some authority in saying that they have not done those abominations, that they could make a statement about the gay marriage would be the Jehovah's Witnesses. They don't celebrate any of those holidays. Now, they don't do it for other purposes, and I think there's a lot of other issues with inside that church. But if you just wanted to take the technical side, you could say, well, they have the right. But they were not very active in Prop 8. And the reason they weren't active is because they don't believe in getting very politically involved. So this is my big question when it comes to this social issue. Do you think that the same-sex couples who are getting married are thinking to themselves as they walk up that aisle, oh man, we are committing the worst abomination known to man. It's an abomination of abominations. Oh, this is so exciting. Because we are going against God, and that is our main goal. Oh, this is getting us stoked. The marriage part, I don't care, but being an abomination, that's what I'm getting into. Or are they saying, well, that's not what it means to me. This isn't an abomination to me. The reason I'm doing it is because I love the other person, because I want to express my love to that person, because I want to take care of that person. I want to show that publicly. That's not what it means to me. Do we see a theme here? Now, I'm going to move on. Before I finish up this episode, I'm going to move on to the Westboro Baptist Church, the whole Fred Phelps situation. They don't celebrate Christmas or Easter. They have much anti-gay rhetoric, and they have some anti-Jewish rhetoric, too. They have a lot of anti-American rhetoric and anti-soldier rhetoric, and they protest tons of soldiers' funerals. But I have a few questions. Now, I've battled this particular issue for years, and I'm certain there's still more and more that Yahweh wants to reveal to me and show me about this whole situation. But I just want to say that I've battled this for a long time. But these are the questions. So what happens when a soldier dies? and leaves behind a wife and kids. Now, I'm not the smartest person in the world, but I'm pretty sure that makes the wife and kids widows and orphans. Now, James 1, verse 27 says, take care of the widows and the orphans. Guard after them. What they should be doing, if they truly are trying to preach a message that Jesus and Yeshua are the only way, and that America's going down the wrong path, and that this is all punishment for what America's sins are. And I understand that concept. I understand what they're going after. I mean, Israel, as much as they loved Yahweh, they always started straying away, and Yahweh would try to bring them back by these random things that he would do. I can understand that concept to a point. I don't think they're totally right, but I can understand the concept. Shouldn't they be going to those funerals, finding the widows and the children, and trying to take care of them, and then in that process, show them, if they truly believe, where their husbands went wrong and how what they're preaching is the right way and only way. Draw them in. It's the kindness of Yahweh that draws us to repentance. But I don't see that. And my question is, how is that wife and child to blame for what the soldier did? If they truly believe that that soldier's going to hell, then I would hope they'd want to draw the wife and children back in to righteousness. But one of the main things I do not see in them are the fruits of the Spirit. The peace, the patience, the kindness, the goodness, the meekness, the gentleness, the self-control. I don't see any fruits of the Spirit going on there. And that to me puts up really big red flags. Now, I did hear a talk show that one of the members had, and she was talking to a person who called in, and the lady was like, oh, do you celebrate Christmas and Easter? She's like, oh, no, we don't celebrate that. That's total paganism. And the lady brought up the concept of, well, do you celebrate the feast? She's like, well, no, because, you know, Paul said that we don't have to do that. I mean, the main thing that was transferred over from the Old Testament to the New Testament was the moral law. The ceremonial law was not transferred over. It was the moral law. Okay, and she was referencing Acts 10, which talks about how Peter had the dream about the food laying out and a lot of unclean food, quote-unquote, from the Jewish perspective, and Yahweh said, eat. And he said, oh, but I can't because it's totally clean. He's like, if I say it's clean, then you can eat it. And then when Peter woke up, the thing that he got from that whole dream was not, oh, we can eat any food we want. It was the Gentiles are accepted as well as the tribes of Israel. It had nothing to do with the food. Now, Paul later talks about how, you know, he doesn't believe that anything we eat is necessarily bad. But that's not what the concept of Acts 10 was about. And also she talks about Galatians and how Galatians talks about how the law died with Yeshua and that we don't have to celebrate the feast. But what Paul was talking about to the Galatians, who were in the Roman Empire at the time, was that the Romans attached holidays to every single day and month and year and season and stuff like that. And he said, don't celebrate the days and the months and the years and the seasons, because that's what the Romans did. However, you see in Acts that Paul was observing the Sabbath. There was a lot of things that talked about how he taught on the Sabbath, how people wanted him to teach on the Sabbath. And in Thessalonians 5:1, he talks about how he doesn't have to tell them about the seasons, because they already know about the seasons that Yeshua has set up and how they come as a thief in the night for those who aren't paying attention. But he says, don't be the same way. You know the truth. You can see the seasons and the times. So obviously he wasn't doing away with the seasons. So my question is, does anybody out there know the section in the prophets that talks about what Yeshua comes to do away with? I never hear this verse talked about. People say, oh, he came to do away with the ceremonial law and the moral law is kept. I don't know that verse. I've never heard that verse. Now, I could be totally missing something. And if I am, I would love to hear from you. But the only verse that I see is in Daniel 9:27, when it talks about what Yeshua comes to eliminate. And all it says is that he came to eliminate the sacrifice and the offering. Talks nothing about a ceremonial law, which would include a lot of things. Don't get tattoos. Don't cut the edges of your beard off. All those things like that. That has nothing to do with sacrifice and offerings. That has to do with just normal everyday things. I don't remember it ever saying that Yahweh eliminated those things from the law. So then I'm sure the question is, well, then do we have to follow every ounce of that? And what Paul is saying is that Yeshua came so that we're not under the law. We as a Christian society still look to something to gain some moral perspective as to where we should go. It is a compass to get us to Yahweh. Once we get to know Yahweh and Yeshua, we have to listen to them. The word points us to him. And Yeshua died and was resurrected so that we would not be under the law, meaning we would not be dead to the law. We would be alive in Yeshua, which means he guides us every day. The Spirit guides us every day. So we might eat something that would be technically unclean and unhealthy for us. I'm sure there's a lot of us out there that eat food that necessarily isn't the healthiest for us. I mean, we eat food all the time that has pesticides. That's not good for us. But yet we don't feel like we're sinning. We don't feel convicted not to do that. Some of us do, and we need to heed that. But we don't all feel convicted that that's a problem. So it allows the Spirit to guide us instead of us having to follow the law very specifically. Yet we are good about looking at other people and going, you are a sinner. You are evil. You are doing an abomination. And Yahweh calls it an abomination. But when it comes to Christmas and Easter, we always go, yeah, but that's not what it means to me. Now, I think Westboro has a purpose. I think Fred Phelps and his whole family has a purpose. I just don't think it's the purpose that they think it is. I think it's going to draw out what Yahweh wants to be drawn out. The heart of people are going to be drawn out. We are going to see the heart of so many people, both the good and the bad, drawn out because of this. Because it's like taking a knife and cutting out all the dead branches in our lives, stuff that we used to kind of hide behind. Now all of a sudden this issue has come to the forefront, and some of us have to take a stance as to what we believe. But the question is, why do we believe that? And like I said, I'm not promoting a social agenda here. What I am doing is challenging you to stop and look at yourself before you start preaching against somebody else. Say, Yahweh, cleanse me out first, and then I can preach. And if you feel like you are supposed to say something that would be against that, that would be for Prop 8 or anything along those lines, or any social issue for that matter, and you and Yahweh have worked it out in you, then I am 200% behind you, like I said. And I would say, be obedient and make a stand and make your statement and do what you feel called to do, because that is built off of your relationship with him. And this ties into the main verse, the main thrust of this episode, and that's Matthew 7, 1 through 5. Judge not that you be not judged. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove that speck out of your eye? And look, a plank is in your eye? Hypocrites! First, remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck out of your brother's eye. That is what we have to do. Before you start judging anybody, you have to look to yourself first and go, what part of my life needs to be altered? What am I doing that's so similar to what they're doing, but it just has a different face on it? There are many, many, many things I struggle with the Torah and Shaul's writings. Many things I don't connect with. Many things I fight with Yahweh on. And it's in those times of fighting that I get to know him better and understand why he says what he says. And praise be to Yahweh that Yeshua came to save me from the law. Otherwise, I'd be in big trouble because I am nowhere near perfect, and none of us are. And I've learned that I'll speak if Yahweh wants me to speak to somebody. But God will usually have me fall in love with that person first. Totally understand their background. Totally understand where they're coming from. Before I start even making a call as to whether or not they're sinning or not. And you see that with just about every prophet. They usually loved the person or groups of people that they had to pronounce judgment on. Or they had to preach repentance to a group that they hated, but knew were going to repent and turn to Yahweh. And you see that with Jonah. He did not want to do anything Yahweh said because he knew that Nineveh would turn around. And he was not a big fan of Nineveh. And I also remind you that Shaul's writings are what he was trying to address to those churches. Now, they are spirit-filled. I am not negating that. But a lot of his writings, he does say, this is my opinion, or this is what I see the truth as, or this is what I think on it. No matter what, we have to remember that Shaul is not the final authority on those things. What we have to do is take what he says and bring it back to Yahweh and say, how does this apply to me? Does it apply to me? I could go on for another hour about marriage when it comes to people getting married without asking Yahweh whether or not they should get married just because they're getting married. And then 50% of them end in divorce. Something's not right there. Something's not happening correctly. And it's not just about, well, you just need to stay together. Maybe you shouldn't have got married in the first place. But the problem is sometimes we don't think about that. And Shaul talks about that. He says, if you don't have to get married, then don't get married. But if you can't resist temptation, go ahead and get married. And what I find really funny, and just a little side note, is especially in the church, we preach this concept of purity before marriage. And some people date for a year or 2 years, and they remain absolutely pure. I mean, they're able to resist temptation. They're with their other person. They've never had sex outside of marriage. And so my question is, okay, you've lasted 2 years. You've proven that you are not tempted by that stuff. Well, that was your test. Don't get married. You don't have to. Because it's going to be more important to focus on your relationship with Yahweh than getting married to another person, right? That's what Shaul says. So you just proved that you are capable of not having to get married because you can resist those temptations. So don't get married. Did you ever consider it was just a test to see if you were able to do it? And if you were, you didn't have to get married. Just a little interesting thought that I'm sure no one ever thinks about. I never heard that brought up, but that is a very interesting point. So once again, I say this so that you understand that you have to take all of this to Yahweh. Everything I say, take back to him. Even if you totally disagree with me, take it to him, ask him his opinion, study it up, learn what Yahweh has to say, and then that is building your relationship with him. That is the whole point of this episode, this podcast, every part of everything I'm doing, is about you gaining a closer relationship with Yahweh. Not that you agree with me, but that you gain that relationship with him in a closer and closer way every single day. So like I said, I'm not quite sure when my next episode is going to be or what it's going to be about. So I just leave you with this. Take it to Yahweh. Everything I say, everything I tell you, take it to Yahweh. Battle it out with him. You and him decide what the best thing is to do in your life. And with all of these issues that we deal with in the United States, in the world, personally, with you and your friends, with you and your spouse, children, coworkers, take all that to Yahweh. Because he puts these things in our lives to challenge us to get to know him better, to understand him better. And you will be amazed at what he has to tell you as you go through this journey. So until the next episode, again, take it to Yahweh, and hopefully we'll see you soon.